In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Okay, so we start.
Okay.
Ta-da! Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast, the only one that is giving up its listeners for Lent.
We did?
Yes. Oh. We're still doing the podcast, but we have gotten rid of people listening.
Okay. So, I suppose that makes sense. Does that mean I have to eat fish tomorrow?
As long as you don't want to go to hell.
Yeah. All right, I'll think about it.
What'd you do for Fat Tuesday?
Nothing.
Do you realize this is the first year I finally figured out that Mardi Gras means Fat Tuesday?
How could this? I mentioned this when we worked together all the time.
But yeah, I was not paying a lot of attention to you back then. Anyway,
and at the time I thought I was saying something that everyone already knew,
which you were not. But that's okay because nobody was listening. Anyway, welcome to the Magical. I am Tony, and this is.
And I'm William, and this is. The golden episode.
This is William.
The golden episode.
This is the golden something. This episode. Is episode 50.
Golden.
Our golden week-iversary. And it almost was not.
Well.
I mean, it still would have been. Yeah, but we're
a little worried about the weather.
The weather is going a little bit insane. And William is a little bit scared. Because basically there's going to be a giant sheet of ice with some snow on it in a few hours. But it hasn't really happened yet,
I'll probably be okay.
He'll be fine, people. Relax.
Yeah, just relax.
Chill out. Also, stop listening. We gave up listeners for Lent. Oh my god. Tuesday, I had Never Gonna Give You Up, the Rick Astley song, stuck in my head, like, all day. Because somebody posted on Facebook a picture of him and it just said, not even for Lent.
not even for Lent. Oh, wow.
Hold on, I may have to adjust my power options again. It's doing crap.
It's very clever.
What is going on? Don't ever turn off the display. Never. 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 There.
Is this one of those days where you're going to ask me how my week was, but you don't really want me to have much to say because you've got tons and tons and tons to talk about because you went to GammaCon last weekend and blah, 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 blah.
To be fair, I never actually care how your week went.
No, I know, but...
we're talking about...
Like, you don't want me to actually say it on the air because you've got so much to say.
2 weeks.
Right.
Well, did you actually do anything?
I published my book.
Oh, did you publish the third one?
Yes.
What name did you publish it under?
Thresholds.
Thresholds.
Mm-hmm. Which was a complete coincidence that my original drafts was called Threshers. I mean, it's just...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't, like,
so
think...
it's not an alteration of that name.
No.
It's a different, completely different name that also has Thresh.
Yes, I just decided that was a good... That was thematically, it worked. And then at first I almost didn't call it that because I thought... But this is
Tony
like
Tony will mock you.
Yeah, and it's coincidentally so close to what I was originally going to call it, and I thought, who cares?
So it is published.
It works thematically. There is a paperback version available on Lulu that will be available lots of other places in a couple weeks, and there's also an electronic version that's available.
All right, I'll try and find the Lulu link and stuff afterward for all of that. I am in the middle of my reread of Harbingers. That has taken longer than it should have, as I mentioned to you, because something happened when I printed out my copy of it, and I only got 65 pages.
Yeah, right.
And I thought, this seems really short. And then I finished it, and it was coincidentally, like, at the end of a chapter. And I was like, this seems like an abrupt ending, but I can't remember how it was before, and he did more editing since then. But it seems really short. And so then next time I looked, it's like 189 pages. And so, yeah, so I'm still working on that.
The third book is 200... Oh, shoot. 277 pages,
I think. Oh, my goodness.
And then I added some... In the book, I went ahead and added some supplemental material, so the whole book is like 355 pages.
That's a lot of supplemental material.
Yeah, it was quite a bit. I just decided to throw in some stuff at the end that relates to some like material that's derived from backstory stuff of characters I thought the readers might be interested in. It's not great literature or anything, but neither is the rest of the book. So,
I discovered what is probably your role-playing game.
Really?
I know very little about it at this point. Here's what I know. It's called Seekers. And the idea... I know very little about. But basically all I got was the blurb on it. But they say you pick basically a philosophy or a belief system, mm-hmm. like any kind you can think of,
right.
And that's the basis for your character, and primarily the gameplay is based around wandering the American, like small town America, like helping out people and solving problems and stuff. and like you seek to better yourself, and actually there's like levels of achieving enlightenment, basically.
Wow.
And I was like, did William make a role-playing game when it wasn't looking?
That sounds like the role-playing game I would make with the expectation that nobody would ever want to play it.
And I'm not sure anybody will ever want to play this one either. Yeah, right. It came up on RPG.net.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's William's role-playing game. Speaking of role-playing, hello, David. We have a new listener.
Oh, we do?
His name is David.
Hello, David.
I met him a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a while ago, and now he's here.
Well, welcome.
Hi. How are you doing today, David?
But just don't ask us to open the pod bay doors. Dave.
Dave. Oh, ah, I see eventually what you did there.
You know, it's because when I look at the microphone I'm speaking into, there's a red light, and so I had to...
I'm afraid I can't do that, William.
Daisy.
Oh, don't... No, no, Daisy. Sorry.
Anyhow.
Yes.
Okay, well, hello, Dave.
Id. It's David.
Okay.
It's David.
Dave.
Id. Don't be rude to our new listener. He's going to say, hi, Willie. Come on, that's not right.
But he's listening to our voices through a machine. It just seems like we should be calling him Dave. And, you know, it's just a thing.
You and your Kubrick-isms. Okay, so you published a book. Good job.
Yes. And, you know, I was thinking...
So I had nothing to do with this one, no, so this really... last one's going to suck.
Yeah, it's probably going to suck. Yeah, I was thinking about it, too, and there are some things I should... You know, if anyone is inclined to purchase it, there are probably some things I should say about it. For example, if you're not inclined to read the first two books before you read this one, there's probably no point reading
it. Oh, yeah, no, that gets weird. It gets really weird otherwise.
It does not stand alone very well, and also it gives spoilers to things that happen in the first two books. There's no point in reading it if you're not going to read the first two books. And if you're wondering if you should read anything I've ever written, there are a few questions that you need to ask yourself before considering.
How much time do you have left to live?
There's that one.
And how do you want to spend it?
There's also, if you're the kind of person, if you read fiction because you want it to sort of wash over you in this sort of, you know, the text is rich and textured and there's lots of great descriptions of settings and situations and people, and you can basically let the author tell you everything you need to think and feel and know about this world, well, then you don't want to read anything I've ever written, because I don't write like that.
No, his style tends to be very minimalist, less evocative and more more he tends to be very, the stories go very quickly. It's very it's a bit I see this style more in short stories than I do in novels.
Right, and also it's in third person intimate or third person limited, as it's sometimes called, which means that and for me I think of a lot about how the character it's written in third person, but through a character's sort of perspective, and I think a lot about what that character would pay attention to, what they would think about, and if. Like in one place, I remember one of my editors wanted me to describe a town that a character was driving through, and I just knew that the character wouldn't be paying attention to any of that stuff. So now the reader might wonder, but that doesn't concern me.
It tends to be very focused. It tends to, and based on literary criticism I've heard, this is going to sound negative, and you should not take it this way, listeners especially. I don't really care what William thinks. He tells more than he show. He tends to tell and not show.
Yep, right.
There are details. There's a fair bit of philosophy involved. It is character specific.
Mm.
Philosophy shows up when you're inside the head of a character that is philosophizing. Description is as needed. Like I say, it's not meant to be particularly evocative. It's about the story, and it's about the character perspective. It's not even about the character description.
No.
It's about character perspective and story.
And you know, I used to stress out a little bit about the whole show, don't tell thing until I realized, why am I doing that? There are a lot of great authors who have spent a lot of time in their books telling rather than showing it. That's just kind of an arbitrary rule. I would rather show than tell, of course, and yes. I try very much to do that. But the focus of my storytelling, as you just pointed out, is really kind of on these stories are really a study in perception of the characters and of the reader. And I want, if you as the reader, if you prefer your fiction to sort of perceive for you, if that makes any sense, then my stuff doesn't do that.
No.
I want the reader to add their own opinions and biases and perceptions. I want them to fill in the blanks as much as they can so that the storytelling experience they're having as they read, they're part of it. And some people don't like that. Some people find that to be too much work or whatever, and that's fine. And I realize that my work is going to have a very, very limited appeal. But
it's much more like a fable is written. So again, short story, much more common to see this.
Right.
In certain types. There are some types of short stories that are the exact opposite of this. But this is a common style for short stories. As far as the show don't tell thing, I think that is very important advice for poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And insofar as you want to achieve poetic effect in your prose, I think that's important. I don't think it's nearly as important for prose in and of itself.
No, and again, it depends a little bit on what you're trying to achieve.
And what I will also say, one of the side effects of this style for William's books is they read very quickly and very easily. They are a great way, they work. I don't want to say light reading because they're extremely thought provoking later, but they're very digestible. You can read it and it's not complicated. It's not, you don't slog through anything. It's not, you don't have to reread things and say what, right? Like it's very much a story and it makes sense and it's very quick and easily read. You tend to spend a lot of time later thinking about it, but it's thinking about ramifications. It's not. The stories are not dense at all.
No. I try to make the plot and everything is, you know, there's twists and turns, I hope, that are surprising, but I don't want that to be the thing that is overwhelming your thinking. The main thing that I'm going for in the reader experience is, just like you said, I want there to be, when you put the book down, I want there to be things that you're thinking about or wondering about, there should be a lot more questions at the end of it than answers.
Yeah, it's a parable. There's a lot. It's a complicated parable. It's philosophical fantasy.
Now, the first book is, you know, if you pick up the first book and you read it, I encourage you to have patience, because there's a lot of things that I do in the first book that I probably didn't execute as well as I would in the later books. But hopefully in the later books, I sort of correct some of that, so that if you read all three books together, it probably makes more sense than if you just, say, read the first book all by itself. You kind of have to go on to the next one and the third one, and then you finally get, oh, I see what he was trying to do.
And I'm still, you know, midway through the second one. But the first one, while I admit it starts much slower, although still that's, you know, on a scale, it still goes very quickly, stuck with me much stronger than the second one. And I actually like the second one less. Mm. And I've been analyzing this, not as a piece of writing, personally. Mm. I enjoy the second one's story less, and that's not to say I don't like it. But less than the first. And the first, to me, was beautifully standalone. Obviously, I'll see more as I go through them. But the first one, to me, if you had not written another story, I think that would be fine. I mean, it leaves lots of mystery and stuff, but there's definite narrative resolution, and it was very complete in its thoughts, in my opinion.
Well, for the character arcs, I agree.
Well, and just in general, for the, like, yes, it left the vague and the mysterious parts left me wondering, mm-hmm. but not in a way like there was a hole. Like, I could see it very much in a way that the author maybe never really answered those questions, even for themselves. No, I thought it fit fine.
That's right, and that was true. But I knew that, I mean, this third book, a lot of it was conceived of even before the second one was. So I kind of always had the story for the third one in mind in some broad sense, although it's a lot different than I originally conceived it.
I'm starting to think that my dislike of the second one involves a personal dislike for many of the characters in the second one. Oh. And again, not for how they were written. Like, this is not a writing issue. This is, I personally don't like them. You know, and in the first book, I liked just about everybody, even the villains, like I had some ties to and stuff. And in this book, even the good guys, I'm like, I kind of don't like you.
Wow, I wonder how you're going to feel about the third one.
Well, and there's a lot of specific belief systems and mythos within the second book that I don't strongly associate with, mm-hmm. whereas in the first there were ones that I tended to associate with.
Well, and then that's an interesting thing, too, that I would warn people about. If you tend to like stories where when a character talks about the universe they inhabit, and that you as the reader are supposed to understand that explanation is something that you can take for granted as an established thing about the universe, if you like that kind of story, these aren't for you, because a lot of characters will say things about the world they inhabit, but it's their opinion. Someone else might say something that totally contradicts it later.
But a funny thing, and this is a Williamism in my opinion, I don't think you could write other than this. There are never any shallow characters. There are misguided characters, there are selfish characters, there are self-involved characters, but, like, they all could sit down and tell you a life philosophy.
Well, yes.
That's so not the way the world is.
I suppose not.
But it's very cool.
But in my world, it's like that.
Perspective there.
If you...
I should also say, partially, your first book touched on a lot of things that have been rolling around in my head for a book series I was going to write for many years. So that may have been part of my tie into those.
Oh, and another thing, if the original Star Wars trilogy, Empire Strikes Back, is your least favorite because it ended on a cliffhanger and stuff, then you're not going to like my stuff.
There are not many people for whom the Empire Strikes Back is their least favorite.
I know, but there are some.
And they are called assholes. If Empire Strikes Back is your least favorite of the original trilogy, I will punch you in the throat.
Now, if you do decide to pick it up, though, I think that you're going to be happy with a lot of aspects of it. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's vampires, werewolves, ghosts, that kind of thing, and I think that the lore that I've built around these characters is fairly original.
Yeah, it's philosophical fantasy, but fantasy is definitely there.
And also, I was thinking about this too, and maybe you would agree with this or not, I don't know, but there are immortal characters in it, and what I tried to do with this story, and maybe I did okay with it, maybe I didn't, but what I tried to do was, it seems like a lot of stories that have immortals in them, you know, there's a lot of stories that say, well, the myths and legends were true, and those characters still exist today, and,
yeah,
you know, that's not a new idea. But my experience with those stories is that the magical world that those immortals inhabit is like the real world. And we mundane people just don't see it. It's just invisible to us. And sometimes there's sort of a gray area, like in Neil Gaiman's American Gods, where, yes, their mythical world is the real world, but they're tied to this world through worship and everything, and yeah, that has an impact on them. Whereas in my story, the immortal characters, whether they're werewolves, vampires, gods, whatever, they're mostly ordinary people. And the history of the Earth, you know, all that history, they live through it, and it applies to them just like it applies to anybody else. The scientific revolution affected how they think and how they look at their world, just like it affected ordinary human beings. So there's not this parallel world that exists next to the mundane world. They live in the mundane world with us. They're just immortal, and they might have certain characteristics that are, you know, not human. And I think that's a little bit different than most people do it.
We also, William and I theorized a long time ago that it would make a hell of a role-playing game as well.
Well, and of course the plot of all three books involves an FBI agent suspecting that certain fantastical things that are going on are a role-playing game, where the role players use advanced technology to sort of recruit people into the game who don't realize it's a game.
Which is also part of my problem. I don't think I like her.
Oh, you don't like her?
I don't think I do. But this reminds me of a very,
she's in
very
all three
good
books,
point.
So.
This is a very good. There's two points I want to bring up, and then we should really move on. But two points. One, if you read these books, and you read the first book, when you start it, you're going to say, holy shit, what is wrong? Like, you're gonna say, oh my god, this guy writes like a seventh grader.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but this is serious. Like, you're gonna say, because, you know, you just have our word to take for it, and you're gonna open it up, and you're gonna be like, what the fuck was wrong with those guys? Read through like the prologue. It doesn't start off normal in its writing style, and that's intentional, and the whole book won't be that way.
No.
The whole book, the original is narration within narration, and that narration is really shitty.
on purpose.
On purpose. Because when he gave me the first copy to read, I'm just reading the first couple pages, and I'm just like, I don't know how I'm going to have to move, because I can't talk to him about this, because this is the worst thing I've ever read.
Oh, it's
and
really
then
awful.
Suddenly it stops.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, thank God. And he did not warn me, the bastard.
Although what's interesting is that pretty much sums up the approach I take to writing all of the characters is, again, in a way, I would like for people to almost think that when you read a chapter, and again, it's from third person intimate, and you sort of see it from this character's perspective, that it almost seems like each chapter, as it changes the perspective, is written by a different person. Because each of those characters sees their world in so different a way that the writing style even changes from
and
one
it
thing
is
to the other.
The limited omniscience of the third person is very biased.
Yes.
But very much biased toward whatever character we're currently on.
At least that's the way I tried to do it. And I think that probably gets more dramatic as the books go forward.
And it was something to get a little used to, because originally I'm like, he's telling me too much of how to think.
Yeah, yeah.
And because it's in third person, so you think that's what's going on. And then eventually I'm like, no, this is a third person filtered through the character whose head we're currently
that's
in,
right.
basically. But yeah, so the important thing, yeah, get past the first few pages. Trust me, it's not all like that. Don't be scared that you have been bait and switched in a big way. It's normal. And the second thing is, for people who aren't going to look at the site and links and stuff, specifically, here's the deal. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu is the easiest one. The first book is called Twilighteners.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Twilight, unfortunately. E-N-E-R-S. And the author for all of these is Clifton, T-O-N, Clifton, D, is it just middle initial?
Or D-E-E.
Or D-E-E.
Yeah.
Hawk. That is the author name, Clifton with one F, D. Hawk. First book is called Twilighteners. So find it, get it, read it. You can get it cheap as an electronic version also.
And if you get it from Lulu, I actually get more money.
Yeah.
Than if you get it from Amazon or someplace.
But don't worry about that too much, because he really doesn't get much money.
No. Regardless. That's true.
We talked about it one time, and I'm just like, yeah, wow, there's no use out of this.
It's a tiny little amount.
Yeah, so don't do it because it's good, and share it because it's good. Don't do it to try and get William rich, because that's not going to happen from this.
Probably not.
That was my second point, was I wanted to make sure that, because I'm sure some people don't ever go to the blog. The rest of you, and you people, should go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Many of our wonderful listeners put up all sorts of interesting comments there.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Although, funnily enough, I don't believe anybody commented on my wonderful, wonderful joke at the end of last episode.
Your wonderful, wonderful joke?
About the chickens.
What about the chickens? I don't remember.
Guy bought a farm.
Oh, yeah, nobody. I don't think anyone...
My mother-in-law did, though, because my wife had to tell my mother-in-law, and she grew up on a farm, and she thought that was hilarious.
Oh, she did?
Yes. And the producer did create a specific themed for that episode Ryan Gosling meme, which I sent to you, and you never commented on.
I didn't see it.
I emailed it to you.
I didn't see it.
Oh, well, maybe you I have to see it, because I'm going to put it on the blog. I was waiting until that episode was done. To put it, I didn't want to put it on the blog to spoil.
Yeah,
well, it for
when did
anybody.
You send it to me?
I don't know, some in between, somewhere in the last 2 weeks.
I did not see it.
Uh oh.
Huh.
It's a Ryan Gosling themed meme specifically about.
Well, I wonder that. Because it had an attachment on it, it might have gone in my spam folder.
Possibly,
or
but I mean,
thing.
It was from my usual email.
Well, yeah, I know. Why? So yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Know. I did not see it. That's weird.
But I will put that up too. I hated it. But it totally did make me laugh. Like, it was pretty awesome. And you know how I love Ryan Gosling memes, so...
Yeah.
There we go. But yeah, not a lot of commentary on that. I'm not sure a lot of our listeners are farm people.
Well, I also think that it's taking people a while to catch up. I think.
I am, but a lot of have recently caught up. Stu has recently caught up. Sir Guido has recently caught up.
Mm-hmm.
Blood Sparrow has recently caught up. People were behind. They were doing things. A lot of things going on. So, but they are hard hats, damn it, and they are sticking with it.
And we appreciate it.
Yes. And I think Mark got a little behind, but he's better now.
I hope he's feeling better because he was sick.
Yeah, I saw Mark at GamerCon.
Oh yeah, did you? Is he?
And
is
his
he okay?
Lovely wife.
Is he all right?
Yeah, he's doing fine.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I'm sorry we took so much time talking about that.
Now you're supposed to ask me what I did.
I thought you were just going
to
say.
No, you're supposed to ask.
I'm supposed to ask you?
That looks rude if I just say.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. So, how have things been with you?
Well, thank you for asking.
Oh, you're welcome.
I was not going to share because we'd taken enough time, but since you ask, I suppose I could say. It was a busy couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. That's why I almost didn't say anything about my book.
Oh, but your book is way bigger news. Yeah, did GamaCon. Loved GamaCon.
Oh, you did? Fun. Good. Oh, and you played several games.
I played two. I was going to play three. One of them got canceled, but it was the one that was at least... There were two that I specifically like was wanting to play because I wanted to try out the system because I'm thinking of running it. And the other one, I was just like, oh, it's Sunday. It looks like fun. So I was less sad that that got canceled. Mm. But the other two were actually both run by David, our new listener.
Oh!
I'm
sorry. I can't do that, Dave.
Yeah. And David is a pretty hardcore RPG geek, and I have become a burgeoning one. And so, and by what I mean by that is not a geek who plays RPGs, but I mean someone who gets geeky about RPGs and the craft and the design mm-hmm. of RPGs. Mm-hmm. And I am slowly sort of turning into one of those. And it's very useful because I've been having just tons of conversations with David over email about all that kind of stuff. And I can totally discuss with him my Traveler game that before I kind of just talked to one of my players, which was sort of unfair to them and awkward if I was annoyed at them. But so now I'm talking to David about lots of things there. That game has taken a hard left in a weird way, and we're sort of adjusting there, but we're still going on, and it's going to be good. And met up with all the Happy Jacks people.
Oh, yeah, right.
That was pretty awesome.
Good.
I got to meet Azure Talon.
You did?
In person, yes.
I thought you weren't going to meet him.
No, I met Azure Talon, and I met Useless Trivia Man.
Oh, wow.
In person, and I met Jimto, who doesn't listen to this, and I met... Gandalf the Plaid, who also doesn't listen to this. Of our listeners, yeah, I think I just met those two. But that was very neat. They all came down here. We all went to Two Dogs. It was fun. And they had games. They had this awesome game they had built called the Grindhouse that was this elaborate set with this giant tower, and it was basically a giant melee of King of the Hill thing where they had all these different fighters come in and try and win up to the top all day long doing it. People really liked that.
Wow.
And I learned about another gaming convention. Davenport is going to have their first one ever of this one called XenoCon that's going to be in April. So I will probably attend that.
Oh. Well, okay.
So that was pretty awesome. Outside that realm, the producer and I have been watching more and more Battlestar Galactica. And it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like, not like decent or watchable. It's an actual good series. And when it comes to an hour-long drama that is sci-fi or fantasy, I have not been able to say that in a long time.
Yeah, I know.
It is actually good. I am kind of surprised because I still did not like the miniseries. The miniseries was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the show is pretty darn good, and I'm pretty impressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah.
I hope that, you know, you stay liking it. I think, like I said,
a lot of people seem to not everybody, but a lot of people seem to dislike the last season.
Yeah,
but I'm not.
I didn't hate it.
I mean, lived through fifth season Babylon 5. I can handle anything.
Well, that's just it. It's I didn't like it as good as the other seasons, but compared to other TV shows, yeah, it's like, well, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose that most of the disappointment comes in wishing it was something that you felt great about the whole way through, because it seems like nothing can do that.
Yeah.
Everything sort of dips near the end or something. I don't know.
Unless it's taken too early, like Firefly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, or something that, like in British series, that they're smart enough to, like the original Office, I thought was the perfect length and it didn't get worse or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Ended when it should have.
Yeah.
So.
So yeah, we've been watching that. Went to the movies last night, saw the Oscar nominated animated shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Bijou mm-hmm. was showing
at the
those.
Bijou, yeah.
That was pretty cool. Canadian animators have got some shit they have to work through. They have got some issues they're getting out through their cartoons.
When I was going to school there, I would go to that every year and I think that was even true for the Canadian animators back then.
There's some stuff there. also, Pixar just shouldn't be allowed to be nominated.
Why is that?
It's just not fair. Like, they're just on a sort of a different level.
Mm, yeah.
And it's just... And I don't even think that Pixar's was my favorite this time.
Yeah.
But it was up there, and it's just a whole, the animation quality, the story design, the sound, like, it's just a whole other thing, and I'm like, that's just not fair. You know, it's, their parents bought that stuff for them.
Well, and a lot of animated shorts are very artistic, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the Pixar stuff is for, you know, popular fare, and it's really not. To make the comparison is probably not.
Yeah.
A,
I mean, there were some that sort of fell into that camp this time too, and then there were some that were definitely arty.
Yeah.
And some, like, I think my favorite was sort of a combination.
Hmm.
It was called Morning Stroll, I think. I get it mixed up because here's the thing: it starts and it says this is based off of a true short story from like 1986 or something.
Mm.
And one of them was called The Chicken and one of them was called Morning Stroll, and I don't remember which was which.
Oh.
But it's about a guy walking down the street, sees a chicken walking the other way, and the chicken goes up to a door and knocks on the door with its beak, and the door opens and it goes in. But the way the film has it is, first, it's done in a very minimalist black and white line drawing sort of animated style, and it's set in 1959.
Okay.
And stuff happens.
Okay.
Then we go to 2009, and it's done in a much more modern animated style, and we tell essentially the same story on the same street corner, but it's different because of the time period, and things are different. Like, I feel like I don't want to spoil, but, okay, like, the situation is different, the person noticing is different, the way they react is different, and the only real similar thing is there's a chicken walking down the street. And then they go to 2059, and that's a very different thing, and the animation style is very different, and the whole situation is different, and then they have a little sort of closer at the end where you see what's behind the door and stuff. That's just kind of funny, but it was very creative, and it was really interesting as far as animation, because there was a lot of different stuff, and I liked it a lot.
Hmm.
Well I
almost went down there to watch some of those this the weekend that they were showing that stuff, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
I haven't been for a long time.
We haven't been to many movies recently. There hasn't been a lot that we've been that interested in.
Oh, I want to see the Ghost Rider movie.
Oh, fuck you. You don't even want to see it. You just said that to piss me off.
No, I do want to see it.
Why?
Well, because I liked the first one.
You did not.
I did.
Get out of my house.
No, I liked it.
The first one, oh my God, what is wrong with you? The first one was atrocious.
I know, it was awesome.
No, it was, yeah, it was. No. Oh, it was bad, and it was boringly bad. No.
Nah, I liked it.
Ugh.
It, you know, it's...
There's, why do they keep giving Nicolas Cage work?
This is what I'm saying. There's two types of people in the world. The people who like Nicolas Cage and the people who can't stand
him. I saw Leaving Las Vegas. That was awesome.
Oh, I didn't like Leaving Las Vegas.
I saw Raising Arizona. Also awesome.
Yeah, Raising Arizona... And you don't see that kind of thing in like the Ghost Rider movie. I don't know. He's just something about him is just funny to me. He doesn't have to do very much, and I'm laughing.
Like, this is what, you know how everybody, maybe you don't, at Thanksgiving dinner, there's always that one topic that if it comes out, you know the meal is ruined and plates are going to be thrown and, you know, shit's going to fly and somebody's going to leave the house and go to a bar and get drunk. For us, it is the producer and I discussing with her youngest sister, Ghost Rider. Like, as soon as that comes up, somebody's getting socked in the mouth.
Yeah, I want to see it.
That does not go well. The producer was kind of interested. She's like, I heard this time they sort of embraced their badness. Oh. And like they're sort of like awesome.
Well, I thought
horrible.
See that's what I thought they did before.
No,
kind of.
I don't think.
I didn't think they took themselves that seriously.
No.
Huh. Well, maybe that's just me.
Then I saw the D plus on AV Club, and I'm like, yeah, I'm out.
Well, I hope it's not horrible. I didn't think
it will be.
I didn't think it was the original was as bad as
I've seen
Daredevil and
awesomely
stuff.
Bad.
Daredevil
see,
was terrible.
I liked Daredevil.
Oh, I thought it was horrible.
And here's the thing. I can handle awesomely bad. I'm still watching Once Upon a Fucking Time. I can totally handle awesomely bad. Ghostbusters. Ghost Rider for me was bad and boring at the same time.
No, it wasn't. I mean, I don't know. A lot of people didn't like Elektra. Which I thought was okay.
I thought Elektra sucked, too.
It was a very slow-paced film, to be sure.
Oh, and there was no payoff. It was,
I don't know, but for some reason I liked it.
But I will say it was better than Catwoman.
Well, I didn't even see that, but...
I saw the first half. That's how bad Catwoman was. I saw the first half and stopped.
Wow.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Halle Berry in leather, and I stopped. It was not good. Oh, you bastard.
We've done it again, haven't we? We're way over 30 minutes. And...
Oh, yeah, we're at about 40.
Jeez.
Hey, it's our golden
Doofenheimer. I know, but you know, have you noticed that people aren't commenting on our stuff in the thing very much? Because it's probably because they listen. It's like, when are they going to get to the hat? And we only pull a couple things. They're like, oh, I'm not even going to comment. That was such horrible. I mean, it's bad, but it's worse if we don't pull stuff
out of
the
hat. Here's the thing. The comments have been a little bit less lately. The actual traffic on the website, much busier.
Really?
A lot more people have been showing up. I don't know what that's about.
Hmm.
So, people, don't make William sad. Go to the blog and comment, themagicaltalkinghat.com.
Yeah, but if
Go
they don't there. Have anything to say because we didn't draw very much out of the hat, then...
They frequently have a lot to say about the other bullshit we
talked
about.
I think that they fast forward through the entire... they'll go right to 30 minutes, and if we're still talking and haven't drawn anything out of the hat, they're like, what?! You're jipping me out here.
Do you really think they use that racist slur against gypsies?
I didn't know it was.
That's a real
gypsies.
Thing. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, gypsies. I had no idea.
Heebie-jeebies is also anti-Semitic.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying
Pretty
to say
much
anything. Against...
Any idiom is racist.
I suppose. I never thought of that. I didn't mean to say anything bad against anything. The Romani people because I have
like,
no problem with that.
Top dog is racist against.
Dogs?
No. Ukrainians, oddly enough.
Okay, well, my... Well, that's kind of...
Oh, no, the producer, somebody got really mad about No Way Jose.
Oh.
And the implication was supposed to be that, like, that implies that you are a... We were having trouble figuring it out, because I firmly believe it is simply a rhyme. That somebody just... Jose rhymed with no way, and that's why they say it. But somebody on some forums, of course, got really mad that... And we're, like, trying to figure it out how it's racist. So, like, is it implying that we will never agree with a Hispanic person?
Maybe you just need to find a more European-sounding name that ends with an A, but I don't know what
that means. No way, Sergey.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to start saying that.
Hold on a second, though. What is someone being gypped? And that relates to the gypsies, you say?
Yes.
Meaning that they're thieves or...
Swindled.
Oh, I see. I get it. Well, my apologies to the Romani people. That's not
You should apologize to all the Romani people.
I did.
Because if you don't, they'll come into your house and steal your children.
That's not very nice. I seriously feel bad about it because I had no idea. That's
Did you
what
not?
That meant.
I thought we'd had this discussion before.
No.
Gypped
no,
is not
no.
good. Heebie-jeebies is not good. And top dog is racist against Ukrainians. I might have made one of those up.
I don't want to use a racial slur or an ethnic slur. I don't want to do that. I didn't even know that's what I was doing.
One time,
now I feel very bad.
One time in Britain, we're in a youth hostel. And we're playing Scrabble, and one of the guys says to us, can we use racial epitaphs? And we said, what? And he said, well, I can spell Jap. And I said, you mean racial epithets? I said, racial epitaphs is here lies Ralph, a black man.
I guess, yeah, that would be.
I was like, I don't even know how that works. And no, you cannot. So for the whole rest of that trip, we kept trying to come up with racial epitaphs. This dude here in the ground was Chinese.
Those two words can get confusing.
Especially in Scrabble.
Yeah.
All right, so Hat.
Yes.
It's the name of the show. If you would like to write the Magical Talking Hat, you should do that. You can do that at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Write a question in.
And the opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and not necessarily reflective of the opinions of the hat.
No one understands the opinions of the hat. They are mystical and strange.
Stephen
Gerbic. Stephen Gerbic. Stephen from Serbia. I do know. I believe I do know that he is still listening.
Oh, good.
I believe I couldn't swear to it. I think he's following me on Twitter, so that's a good sign.
Superheroes. How does one become one in this day and age?
It's always radiation, isn't it? Of some sort.
I don't know. Gadgets are cheaper. You could probably do a Batman kind of thing if, you know, you can get yourself, you know, probably what you need to do is you need to go on a Kickstarter, right?
Oh, my God. Kickstarter superhero.
Yeah.
I want to start fighting crime in my hometown. I've determined that I need approximately $50,000 to buy some grappling hooks, some smoke grenades, and a cool car.
And a costume.
Yeah.
With some Kevlar. Yeah. Right.
That is brilliant.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That, oh, as somebody must have done that.
I don't know, I've never heard of it.
Do you know Phoenix Jones?
No.
Phoenix Jones is a real-life superhero in Seattle.
Oh, wait, I think I've heard of it.
He's essentially a vigilante crime fighter in a costume and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he carries non-lethal stuff. He carries mace and a taser and stuff like that.
Yeah, well. Maybe you could Kickstarter your superhero career and get some equipment. Otherwise, if you're talking about having special powers, probably in this...
I think radiation.
Right, but it really comes...
And it's a lot easier to get radiation poisoning than millions of dollars.
Why use radiation when you don't know what the result's going to be?
Well, it's a very narrow window.
When you can just use genetic manipulation. Like someone deliberately decides what they want their power to be. They figure out how to genetically alter themselves, and they just do it
again,
on purpose.
Again, I think that's more expensive.
Yeah, but it's...
You can get overdosed on radiation very easily. The only downside is, well, you don't know which animal it's going to be. It's always some sort of animal, but you don't know which one. And it's a very narrow window because you have, like, nothing, hair falls out, tumors, superpowers, death.
Yeah.
Like, there's a very tiny window.
As cheap as it might be, it's very unreliable.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. I think you're better off getting some financing through something that will allow you to... do the research and have the genetic alterations done, you know.
Oh, Kickstarter superhero. I love that idea.
Yeah. That's
brilliant.
So the answer, I think, Stephen, is venture capitalism or Kickstarter, and I would prefer Kickstarter because obviously, you know.
Grassroots. Oh. Do it, Stephen. Do it. Tell us how it goes.
Yeah.
I love that idea, and I'm not going to do it. But somebody should do it. I don't even care about the decreasing crime. I just want to know that that works. I just want to know that Kickstarter can make you a superhero.
Well, I wonder, you know, what one way that Kickstarter attracts donors of various amounts is that you
money.
Get... Yeah, you get something you know, like it's in return for your investment.
For at the $1,000 donation level, I will personally save you from a mugging.
Right.
You have to provide the mugger.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. For a certain level donation, you get your own signal.
Oh, wow.
Like a flashlight with my emblem on it that you can shine at the clouds.
Whenever you're in trouble.
Or just like a rape whistle with my logo on it. Sure. Something like that.
That'd be great.
Oh, I love this idea.
Signed pictures for like $25, $50.
Any of you who want do this, like listeners, become a Kickstarter superhero and tell us about it, and we will give you secret, super secret, mysterious secret identity publicity on our podcast and on our blog. Do it. That's awesome. I love that.
You know, if I had any skills at all, I would probably do it. You know, like if I was trained in martial arts or something, or, and I wasn't this skinny guy that couldn't knock over an 8-year-old, well, I would probably do it.
You could pay, I mean, the first part, get a bigger Kickstarter loan, and the first part is to hire somebody to buff you up.
Oh, to train me and
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. The first part is to go to Tibet to find the 3-foot-tall little man with the 5-foot-long beard. Will take you out and basically beat the crap out of you via montage for like a year and a half.
Until you're
good.
Until you're ready.
Yes. When you can snatch the pebble from his hand.
I guess so. But, you know,
you have to come back here every Thursday. So
Really the only reliable method to become a superhero in this day and age is that kind of training and all that stuff. But yeah, I suppose someone will figure out fancy ways to mess with human DNA and come up with special powers. I don't know what they'd be, though. I can't think of any that you would come up with, you know, like, it's not realistic to think that you would splice spider DNA onto human DNA and actually make someone like Spider-Man.
Yeah, don't be silly.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
No, you just have to do super soldier bullshit.
Yeah, right.
Stronger, faster, meaner, uglier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bigger pecs.
Yeah. That's pretty much
where
we're
at. I think
that's
how The Rock was made. Not uglier, though. He's a very handsome man.
Well, if you say so.
Have you seen the trailers for the stupid movie right now?
Journey 2.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the trailers, he's making his pecs dance, and the kid throws a berry at him, and it bounces off toward the camera. And I realized, oh my God, because it's in 3D... they decided to bounce a berry off The Rock's pecs so it could fly at the camera, specifically because this film is in 3D. And then I shot myself in the head because I didn't want to live on a world with that.
And yet here you are.
I got better.
Oh. I just thought you were a bad aim.
Drove me crazy.
I mean, you hate guns, so maybe you just didn't really
know
which way to point it.
It turned
perhaps.
Out to be a chopstick. It was a mess. Okay, another question. Thank you, though, Steven. That is brilliant. Somebody do that. Now. We'll wait.
No, we're not going to wait.
We're not going to wait, but do it.
Question.
All right, this one is from Stuart.
Yay.
This could be tricky for you. No, this will work. What's the most interesting international destination you've visited? Cheers, Stuart. You have, in fact, left this country, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. But okay. I went to very specific places, so I don't really have it to compare.
Well, which
to.
Of them was the most interesting?
Oh, well, I would say that really, I visited Moscow.
Call it Moscow?
Whatever. And a few other places in the general vicinity there. What was Leningrad at St. Petersburg,
yes.
I believe, and Helsinki.
No matter what Billy Joel says, God damn it. Oh my God, you're one of the few people who would definitely get that joke. I didn't even think of that.
Well, I was just talking about Billy Joel and that song at home before I came over here.
I used to love that song in the earlier days.
I like that song.
It seems so saccharine to me now.
Oh, I suppose, but...
But at the time, I used to love it.
And I suppose that of all those places, and you know, granted, it's There are just a few places in the same country, so it's not that interesting. Well, Tallinn, Estonia, I guess, which I found really interesting. But I suppose the place that had the, I don't know if I'd call it, I'd say it was the most interesting place, but it made the biggest impact on me personally was Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, because we went to a war memorial there. You know, there was the siege, and it was very moving. It was a very dramatic experience for me, and a very impressive. You know, I don't know. It affected my way of thinking and looking at the world in a profound way. So that's my answer. You?
There is an opium den down in Oaxaca province in Mexico. It's very interesting.
It's interesting, huh?
Very.
And you've actually been to this place? Or you're just making it up?
I'm just making it up.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, let me think. Interesting is a very difficult thing.
Because
there's what I enjoyed the most,
mm-hmm.
And then there's the most interesting.
I mean, all the places I visited were interesting. I wouldn't say any was less interesting.
Probably, if we want to get sort of objectively, like, what most people would consider the most interesting.
For me,
is probably back in the day, and you can't do this anymore. I actually went to and walked up and around in the Colosseum in Rome.
Oh, wow.
I was like 5. Hmm. I believe I got spanked in the Colosseum in Rome because I ran off without my parents.
Whoa.
So that's some powerful shit there.
Yeah.
I went to a lot of European countries when I was 5. And there were a lot of ruins in Rome. I went to, you know, we went to France. I've been to the Eiffel Tower.
And there were places that were ruined after you were introduced to them.
Very often. weird little abbey up in the hills in Italy. I've been to the Alps. I've been on the Matterhorn. Like, not at the top part where you need ropes and shit. But I've been on the actual Matterhorn in Switzerland.
Hmm.
But all this when I was 5. I've been to Canada many times.
Oh, that's true. I've been to Canada.
I've never been to Mexico.
Never been to Mexico, no.
And I've been to, as a grown up, I went to Britain,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Amsterdam. Amsterdam is a very interesting city, and I know everybody's like, "Oh yeah, Amsterdam's a really interesting city." Even if you have no interest in drugs or prostitutes, Amsterdam is a very interesting city.
Mm-hmm.
Amsterdam is a remarkable combination of old and new in just fascinating ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend it to anyone regardless of their personal proclivities in the illicit substances and practices category. It's just an awesome city. It has a metric ton of museums of all sorts. So Amsterdam might be the most interesting. It was very cool.
Hmm.
But of course, there is no international destination more interesting than the good old U.S. of A.
The whole thing.
Yes.
The whole continent.
America! America!
Thank you.
See, it's near the end of the podcast. That's what they always played just before they went signed up. Back when TV channels stopped for the night.
Yeah. Hardly anyone.
You'd have a shot of, like, the Blue Angels, and they'd be playing that song.
Yeah. Or, yeah, right. Or the flag.
Or just the flag, yeah. Yeah. You know, so. Or one superimposed on the other.
Or just color bars. You'd have that sometimes. Well, that was after the anthem was over.
Oh, yeah. Then,
right.
So that's how we're going to choose to end it. We're going to just go. I can't hold it steady on the little thing that's on.
Are we done? We can only draw 2 tonight.
Well, I mean, if you want to go a little long, we can.
Let's go a little long.
Okay, so draw a third one.
Yeah. we really owe it to our listeners because we talk too much about our personal business.
What the fuck is wrong with us?
I don't know.
We're bastards.
Kia.
Which one? Which Kia?
Guess.
Kia G. No, wait, she got married. Kia B.
Kia B.
She was Kia G when I knew her.
Oh, was she?
She was, in fact.
Dear the Magical Talking Hat.
Oh.
Sith or Jedi, and why?
Jeez. I'm so eager to know the complex and nuanced answer that you have for us that I surely cannot guess, William.
Jedi.
But why?
Well, I'd like to think if I were a Jedi, I would be not...
One of those cool Jedi?
One of
those ones with the lightsaber up their head.
Right. No, you know what I'm saying. Like in the games especially, they try to sort of... you know, the Sith are really self-centered and supposed to be bad or whatever, but the Jedi can be really sticklers for the rules and kind of, you know, bad and kind of in their own way. And then you find those Jedi that they don't feel like they're part of the Order anymore and they're on some distant planet. And in the game, they're, you know, when you have the characters are color-coded as red if they're bad and white or blue if they're good. This person's always right in the middle.
Yeah, it's always sort of gray.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's me. I'd like to think that's me. But the truth is, you know, I believe in being good and goodness and goody goodness. So
good.
I do. I know that it's people don't like it. They make fun of it, Pollyanna, all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I believe in that stuff, and I believe in doing the right thing. And you know, I would always be on the side of the group that seems to believe that. Although I hope I wouldn't be, you know, a legalistic jerk about it.
We all hope that, William.
I don't think I would be, because I'm not.
Reality
one now,
doesn't bear it out.
But especially between those two, there's no question that I would not be a Sith. No question.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, so we're talking like if we're magically in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, like, like if... Like, when I'm playing a game or something, and I can only play it once, and I have to pick or whatever, you know, like, I'm totally into the Sith. Like, there's some cool stuff. And sometimes I'm into the Jedi, too. I get a little bored with the Jedi now, because so much Star Wars stuff has dealt with the Jedi, and only comparatively recently do we really get into the Sith.
You get to know what they're about.
I feel like the Sith motivation, at least as it has come out, is more complicated and subtle than the Jedi one. Jedi one has always seemed very sort of stark.
Well, maybe. I mean, for some people that might be true.
And I think that's a narrative issue. I don't think that, you know, applies to the real world of Jedi and Sith. but ultimately, if we're talking about actually, like, you know, got to become one or whatever, you know those Jedi that, like, are Jedi for a while and then something bad happens and they leave and they drink heavily.
Yeah.
And you find them on these isolated planets somewhere.
Kind of like I was just talking about a little bit.
Little bit.
Except without the drinking.
No, yours is the ones that go off to live on their own to follow their own special path.
Well, that's true.
Yes. I'm talking about the ones who decide that they have failed as Jedi and climb into a bottle for the rest of their life until, if narrative structure allows for it, they get some sort of chance at redemption when some stupid kid shows up and needs their help. But for every one of those, there's like 86 other Jedi who had the exact same backstory and then just died on that planet in the bar one night when they couldn't pay their tab. So that's bullshit. And I'm one of those 86.
I see.
Well, I mean, if the kid shows... Well, no. I'm one of the... I don't know. I'm definitely in the 87. Whether or not I'm the one, I don't know.
This reminds me of the time I sat down and I was... I don't know what made me think of this, but I started to wonder if what my Dungeons & Dragons alignment would be.
Or, which edition?
Or if... it would, exactly. Or if that whole alignment structure was just too...
It's pretty shitty anyway.
Yeah. But I looked into it and I felt like, actually, I think this describes me pretty well, and now I don't even remember what it was.
Chaotic good? No, you wouldn't think that about yourself. You would probably sit somewhere in the neutral categories.
Actually, I think it was neutral good. But then someone, I posted that like on Facebook, and someone came back and said, really, I thought you would be chaotic good completely. Well,
because essentially, politically, you're an anarchist.
No, that's true. But that said,
you're not inclined to break laws.
I'm not. Well, let's put it this way. I think that my natural inclination is sort of the neutral good, but I can get pissed off enough to go into the chaotic.
Don't make me get all chaotic on your
exactly.
ass.
Exactly. Because I tend to see the chaotic good people as, you know, maybe being a little more civil disobedience than I'm prone to unless I'm really mad. I would tend to want to work it out, you know,
yeah.
Talk it out, even, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think that's my normal way. On the other hand, like you said, I am an anarchist, so I just. But I'm not like a violent anarchist. I don't think we should go out and tear down all the buildings.
No. You're one of those boring anarchists.
Kind of, I guess. Yeah. Although I can, when I look at the world and how screwed up it is and how it's hurting people, including people in my own family, I can get pretty upset and feel like, yeah, if someone blows up this building, I'm not going to feel too bad about it, kind of thing. But I don't want him to kill anybody.
Have you ever noticed that anarchist is very close to antichrist?
Yeah, a lot of other people have noticed that, I'm sure, too.
Think about that. Also, Britney Spears is an anagram for Presbyterian. Seriously, that's messed up. I don't even know how that happened.
Wow.
Yes. Also, I retweeted a thing the other day that Kumail, the stand-up comedy guy I went to college with, tweeted, and he said the word for pineapple is the same in Spanish and like Chinese or something, and he goes, take that, atheists. And I retweeted
what's
that
supposed to mean,
and I didn't retweet the next bit, which was another tweet he did where he realized that he had spelled one of them wrong and they weren't the same. But I still like that.
Take that, atheist. Huh?
Yes.
Okay.
See, that's why the languages are important. I can't remember. It was Spanish and something, but they were two that were like completely unrelated languages,
because mm-hmm.
that's what makes it fascinating. And proof of God. He occasionally does proofs of God, and they're like that. They're ridiculous. I love them. I think that's it, and we're at like a long time now.
All right. Well, thanks, Kia, Stuart, and
Steven.
We
podcast you long time.
Thanks, Kia, Stuart, and Steven. And keep those questions, comments,
yes,
whatever.
Email the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Do it. Also, go to the blog at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Do some comments. Look at some Ryan Gosling memes. Whatever you want to do. Also, like us on Facebook. We're The Magical Talking Hat on Facebook. Also, follow me on Twitter. I've had a taste of it, and I crave more.
Oh, wow, okay.
I need more followers. So follow me on there, at NotQuiteTony. All one word, NotQuiteTony. Follow me on there. William did it, and y'all do what William does, so do it. I have over 50 tweets now.
Wow.
And 16 followers, I believe.
I have zero tweets, and I don't even know how many followers. Probably not very many. Two? You, maybe?
No, you got a few. But it's basically a lot of people who also don't tweet.
Oh.
So make that happen, people. And we will see you next week for episode 51.
51.
All right. Have a good one.
Later.
Kickstarter superhero is just the most brilliant fucking idea ever.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.